Good afternoon. This is Dr. Daniel J. Guerra, and this is Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is, of course, the second day of April 2024. It's going to be lecture number 10 in inflammasomes. So, I want to remind you, of course, inflammasomes trigger the dimerization of multiple types of proteins that associate with a NOD protein in the cytoplasm. One of the proteins that first dimerizes is the protease known as caspase 1. When it dimerizes, caspase 1 then acts as a protease, convertase, and of course it converts the inactive forms of IL-1 beta and IL-18 into their active forms. And the activation of multiple pattern recognition receptors by PAMPs and DAMPs induce the unique formation of what becomes the specific inflammasome structure. Now, we're well aware of this now. And the major distinction between defensive or what could be called a destructive inflammasome response is itself a major pathophysiological problem. And it comes up many times during pharmacotherapy of some other associated disease, such as obesity-linked atherosclerosis or metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, multiple forms of cancer, and, of course, a complete constellation of autoimmune diseases. So this is where it's presented. Now, during inflammasome activation, of course, the NLRP3 protein, one of the components, right, is the sensor that recognizes both the PAMPs and the DAMPs, the danger signals. It then, that protein will recruit the ASC, remember that's the adaptor molecule apoptosis associated spec-like protein containing a CARD, and the effector protein procaspase 1. You're going to generate then the pro-inflammatory and in fact pre-proteolytic complex, which is the inflammasome. Now, the aspect of pathophysiological endothelial NLRP3 inflammasome activation after a pro-atherogenic stimuli, such as the production of cholesterol crystals, high levels of ATP or uric acid, and in the kidney, hyperhomocysteinemia, all will then coordinate an inflammasome response that becomes pathophysiological because it's associated with these other diseases, right? Particularly the pro-atherogenic state. Now, as previously addressed, these inflammasome activation kinetics correlate with an increased ionic potassium flux. And that, of course, then gets associated with the production of high levels of reactive oxygen, lysosomal rupture, mitochondrial damage, all of which are prolegomena to atherosclerosis during hyperlipidemic aggregation associated with obesity. So dyslipidemia, hyperlipidemia, and amongst other kinds of disorders, including, of course, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, there is also progression of renal glomerular sclerosis. And that occurs because of this other pathophysiology, which I already mentioned to you now, hyperhomocysteinemia. So endothelial FASL, TNF-alpha, oxidized low-density lipoprotein, all induce the formation of what are known as membrane raft clusters, which we know a lot about, their lipid membrane rafts, and what they bring with them is NADPH oxidase subunits, such as GP91 and P47 that we've talked about in the past. And they aggregate. When they aggregate, they amplify NADPH oxidase activity, which of course produces high levels of reactive oxygen. This is all occurring in the arterial endothelial cells. So the membrane raft redox signaling platform that's generated seems to play yet another major critical role in endothelial NLRP3 inflammasome activation. Assembly and activation, I think I would prefer to say. So here's another component. Acid sphingomyelinase, of course, is typically a lysosomal hydrolase, and it's encoded by the SMPD1 gene in humans. And of course, it enhances aggregation of NOX subunits because the product of sphingomyelinase is ceramide, of course, has phenylcholine, and the phosphatidylcholine can be recycled into phosphatidylcholine biosynthesis by an exchange of polar head groups. But the ceramide produced is going to enhance these lipid membrane raft microdomains to increase the amount of aggregated NADPH oxidase subunits, thus forming this MR redox signaling platform, all of which is being set up in the endothelial cells. So you see how acid sphingomyelinase plays a role because it's generating ceramide, which enhances because of alterations of membrane fluidity, membrane trafficking, as with the raft, and that all then coordinates aggregation of polypeptides in specific domains of the membrane, thus leading to this redox signaling platform in the endothelial cells. So upon stimulation, lysosome traffic and fuse to that membrane raft area. And that's via the snare-centered exocytic machinery, which we talked about, I think, the very first time, mosaic. Now, ASM, as I said, hydrolyzes sphingomyelin ceramide, and that reorganizes and aggregates a clustered membrane raft-associated NADPH ceramide-enriched microdomain. Okay, another way of saying the same thing I did a minute ago. So, endothelial cell-specific overexpression, these are experiments that were performed, of the SMPD1 gene enhance the production of ceramide, of course, and associated formation of the membrane raft redox signaling platform, thus producing a proactivating endothelial NLRP3 inflammasome, resulting in endothelial dysfunction and in the intact human atherogenesis. Now, experimentally, the acid sphingomyelinase MR redox signaling is then coupled to endothelial NLRP3 inflammasome activation. And that includes both all of the components we normally have discussed in the inflammasome, that including the ASC and the caspase, but also, because it's in the endothelial cell, there is a thioredoxin interacting protein that's involved. It has kind of an interesting acronym. It's TXNIP, or TXNIP. Okay, that's another component here to consider. So you have sphingomyelinase activity, and you have a thioredoxin interacting protein now to add to what's going on in the endothelial cell pathophysiology associated with atherogenesis. So the endothelial cell-specific overexpression of that SMPD1 is also linked to hypercholesterolemia-induced neo-intimal formation. And that's accompanied by augmented acetylsphingomyelinase ceramide MR redox signaling, and of course the associated NLR P3 inflammasome formation and activation in the arterial endothelial cells. So TXNIP is a critical mediator, and what it does is it links ASM ceramide MR redox signaling directly to the NLRP3 inflammasome. It does so by the protein-protein interactions, which allow for the complete formation and activation of the inflammasome in the endothelial cells. So ASM ceramide MR redox signaling and downstream redox sensor TXNIP, it's a thyrodoxin protein, are all involved in the formation and activation of that inflammasome activation, subsequent neo-intimal hyperplasia, and this is associated with obesity-linked hypercholesterolemia. Now, neo-intima are, what are they? Of course, if you don't know the particular structure, they are new or they're thickened layers of arterial intima formed especially on a prosthesis or simply in an atherosclerotic plaque. Neo-intima occur because of migration and proliferation of cells linked to that endothelial cell complex. Okay? So neo-intima and atherosclerotic plaque development are both dependent on vascular smooth muscle cell interactions, that's the other cell type, with resident vascular cells, extracellular matrix components, and any other circulating, infiltrating via diapedesis cells. It becomes quite a pathogenic status then, you see. So the endothelial cells and the VSMCs interact, and they interact physically and biochemically, and this then generates, typically in normal physiological status, the building of the vascular wall and its homeostatic replacement when it starts to degenerate. So proper endothelial cell function and interaction simply maintains that vascular smooth muscle cell in the contractile phenotype. That, of course, is necessary because endothelial smooth muscle cell is supposed to carry out contraction and relaxation, of course. So gap junctions consisting of proteins such as connexins will, of course, process the sensing that will change blood flow because of, again, vasoconstriction, vasodilation, and then facilitate alterations in the membrane potential. Membrane potential of both the endothelial cells and the VSMCs. Okay, so it's been shown that the endothelial cells stimulate phosphoinositol 3 kinase and AKT signaling, which of course then promotes downstream VSMC contractile modulation. And that all becomes migratory and proliferative during the formation of this endothelial cell complex. All those changes are mediated by not just the few proteins I told you about, but many proteins, many other lipids, and also other metabolites, such as nitric oxide, of course, and prostacyclins, which, of course, are formed from cyclooxygenase oxygenation of preformed very long chain polyunsaturated fatty acids. And all this then not only sets up the smooth muscle cell and the endothelial cell vessel arterial component, but also its redox state poise. Okay? So vascular remodeling involves the reorganization, indeed, of the extracellular matrix, which is always going on. And you know, the ECM is a milieu of polypeptides, including collagen, laminin, elastin, fibronectin, vitronectin. And those are all part of the structural component of what's called the vascular wall. And so these ECM components interact with the vascular smooth muscle cells via integrin and cadherin expression, and that occurs in the VSMC membrane. So responding to stimuli, including, of course, growth factors and then a whole host of cytokines, the interaction between the ECM stimulates the vascular smooth muscle cell to increase the expression of matrix metalloproteases, which become upregulated. And they are upregulated specifically when there is an atherosclerotic lesion. So the matrix metalloproteases are classified by their extracellular matrix substrate. So you have the interstitial collagenases, and those are simply the MMPs 1, 8, and 13. Then you have the gelatinases, those are MMPs 2 and 9, and then you have the stromalysins and the matrilysins. Those are MMPs 3 and 7. Remember, MMP is matrix metalloprotease. You also have now something called the membrane type MMP 14 and 17, and then the metalloelastase, which of course is MMP 12, that we've talked about in previous lectures. So vascular smooth muscle cells also synthesize and secrete plasminogen activators, which contribute to ECM remodeling. And the two most studied plasminogen activators are serine protease tissue plasminogen activator and the urokinase type plasminogen activator. So that's the TPA and the UPA we've been recently talking about. TPA acts on the fibrin in the extracellular matrix, and it has fibrinolytic activity, whereas the UPA is an autocrine type of regulatory protein that binds to UPA receptors on the VSMC membrane exterior leaflet. So all these matrix metalloproteases and these plasminogen activators all regulate the vascular smooth muscle cell migration, proliferation, and when turning over, either autophagy or directly to apoptosis. So the interaction of monocytes with vascular smooth muscle cells is how the developing plaque starts to occur. Right? So monocytes like macrophages. Remember, we've talked about this not that long ago. So you get monocyte recruitment to injured vessel walls. And that occurs because of the VCAM1 expression, again, within the vascular smooth muscle cell outer plasma membrane. And what happens is the monocytes directly interact with these migratory vascular smooth muscle cells, increasing then the expression and release of VEGF. Now, when that happens, the entire system starts to become proatherogenic because VEGF then causes the release of interleukin 6, PDGF, and TGF-beta, all of which are going to start promoting the inflammatory associated increase in atherogenesis. That's where the inflammasome will come into play again. Okay? So apparently acidic sphingomyelinase and ceramide, the product, are absolutely important for the cardiovascular physiology that we just were talking about, and also what we were introducing we introduced twice so far, the pathophysiology. Okay, and as such, during atherosclerosis, lysosomal ASM dependent formation of the ceramide enriched lipid macro domains in the endothelial cells will contribute then to that FASL induced impairment of the vasodilator response, along with what is called a muscarinic 1 receptor mediated coronary artery constriction, both of which are aggravating factors that lead to further atherogenesis, atherosclerosis. And once you get to atherosclerosis, that's when the inflammation kicks in. Now, another protein to consider, there's the WD repeat domain 1. So the WD repeat domain 1, when it's deficient, will inhibit the neointima formation in carotid artery. And that occurs, that WD repeat domain 1 deficiency, because of modulation of smooth muscle cell migration and proliferation. So the WD repeat domain 1 promotes actin depolymerizing factor, that's ADF, cofilin mediated depolymerization of actin filaments. The F actin, of course. So there are a lot of factors involved in a depolymerization. For example, actin depolymerizing factor, that's the ADF cofilin, and then the WD repeat domain 1. Those are two we just introduced. So what happens is ADF cofilin plays a crucial role in actin cleavage, and of course that means depolymerization. Whereas the WDR1 is the major cofactor for the ADF cofilin promoting depolymerization of the actin filaments, that would be F actin. All of that then regulates the balance between actin depolymerization and assembly during normal physiological responses, right? So the WDR1 regulated actin dynamics and kinetics of those reactions affect cellular processes like migration, cell-cell junction turnover and maintenance, and of course, proliferation. Now, interestingly, in the literature, high expression of the WDR1 in breast cancer cells promotes migration and proliferation, and therefore metastasis in breast cancer. Okay? So you see where this is all linked back together with this neointima. Now, ASM-derived ceramide mediates, as we've been saying, the NLRP3 inflammasome activation in many different tissues. And we've already mentioned these, telling you again, in the cardiac muscle and in the kidney. And ASM deficiency inhibits the endothelial NLRP3 inflammasome and that neointimal lesion. Okay? Now that's because of that ceramide mediated response. Remember the membrane lipid RAS. We just went through this whole process. So endothelial ASM ceramide signaling promotes endothelial NLRP3 inflammasome activation during hypercholesterolemic stimulation. So when you get hypercholesterolemic cholesterol crystal formation in the membrane, that stimulates the neointima formation and then the atherogenic pathophysiology. See how that works. Now, recall that reactive oxygen generation is one of the major triggers of that inflammasome, the NLRP3 inflammasome, the one we're talking about now. And ROS can, of course, be generated in the mitochondria, but also in the endoplasmic reticulum. So you get ROS in the damaged ER, you get ROS from damaged mitochondria, and then you get that NADPH oxidase migration aggregation, which also produces reactive oxygen. So the whole system then has been kind of renamed in the literature. They're now called membrane-wrapped signalosomes rather than simply membrane lipid rafts, because they use that membrane raft as a molecular platform to transduce and amplify the redox signaling, all centered around the NOX subunit aggregating clustering activity because of sphingomyelinase-induced ceramide production. This will then continue to activate and produce more superoxide. Okay. Now, it's clear from all the work that we're covering here, it's a 2022 paper, late 2022 paper, of course, it'll be in the show notes, that the sphingomyelinase, particularly when they do experiments where they overexpress the gene, the SMPD1 gene, that will enhance the WD-induced formation of ceramide-rich membrane raft redox signaling. And that is, of course, read out as an increased formation of the flotillin-1 positive membrane raft clusters. And these all aggregate because of the ASM ceramide and or because of the NOX subunits, GP91 and P47, all of which link back up to the production of superoxide. So WD, that protein, increased arterial fluorescence in the arterial wall, including in the endothelial cells and the smooth muscle cells. Okay, and that further is increased when the sphingomyelinase is overexpressed in these experiments. So it's not surprising then that you see this increased level of superoxide and, in fact, hydrogen peroxide generated, of course. And that hydrogen peroxide is cell permeant, and it is released directly into the medial layer. So the endothelial cell specific sphingomyelinase gene overexpression basically enhances oxidative stress in the arterial wall. And that overexpression of the sphingomyelinase shows a direct association between cholesterol crystal formation, stimulating ASM ceramide pathway to induce membrane raft redox signaling within the endothelial cells, triggering endothelial NLRP3 inflammasome. Okay? So that basically ends that entire study. So quickly, let me say this. There are biological networks, and these are processes becoming eventual in nature. So what we've been describing with the inflammasome. And they're opposed to being controlled by any one metabolic agent, as you're beginning to see. So this is an event ontology that reaches across multiple biological networks, which include genetic, epigenetic, and environmental interactions. All of this becomes articulated and synthesized through epigenetic modifications, which we've also been talking about, remember the methylation, of classical and acquired immune systems, right? Such as the production initially of these pro-inflammatory cytokines, and then, of course, the uptake of the monocyte macrophages and the T cell responses and the B cell responses, generating what I call a plastic and elastic memory field, molecular memory field, capable of metabolic scanning, focusing, accession, mediation, and a kind of molecular learning, and then a reaction to stimuli, of course, all through time. So that is a component of what I call the diaventome, right? Which the inflammasome is just one example of, right? So I started to get into, at the end of this lecture, the metaphysical questions about how this entire system comes together as a mosaic in the living system. So there's more to say about the diaventome, but I'm going to have to stop because I'm out of time. And we will definitely finish that discussion next lecture. Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast, 2 April 2024, saying bye for now.